The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Zinc Media. Feel the power of knowledge.
One and all of you liberty lovers and ecclesiastites all around the globe, it is I, your lovable host, Elrod, coming to you live from the Bunker Eye Studio, located somewhere within the great granite state of New Hampshire, where the state motto is still, live free or die. I almost forgot for a second there. But no, I could not forget. It hasn't changed. All the kiddies are back in school. School buses still have it on their license plates. I don't think, you know, a few years ago, when they changed the plates and they started putting the old man in the mountain on the plates, they changed the first responder vehicle plates, police cars. I don't think fire trucks have license plates on them. I'll have to look. But police cars, they change their plates, and now they're completely different from the rest of the state. Here they're called municipal police or MPs, MP plates, and they all have their I guess they're state registered. And I have to look into exactly what, because no two cops cop cars have the same, they're all numbered, so no two cop cars have the same plate. Lettering or numbering. They're just, you know, MP613 or something like that. I don't know if it's just by municipality or if it's, I think it's statewide, because I don't know where they started. But anyway, they changed them because they used to look like everybody else's plates, and now they look completely different. I don't know why that is. Don't know why they changed them to make them look like totally different. I guess to make them special. But again, I don't believe the fire trucks even have license plates. And I know mail delivery trucks don't have license plates. You ever see that? The mail, well, not Jeeps anymore, but they used to be Jeeps. But the mail, little mailman delivery trucks that they take out to the route and park them and deliver your mail if they walk or what have you. They don't have plates on those either. Some of the bigger trucks do have plates on them, but there's some sort of federal plate. Now, the interesting thing is that federal vehicles like that. Now, if you have a federal, if you're a federal employee and they give you a car, you know, and it's got the plate on it, G10 or something, to show your rank, those have a certain kind of plate on them, the G whatever. But notice that none of the federal vehicles ever have to be registered with the state, and none of them ever have to pass inspection. Now, the interesting thing is that they don't even have to pass the smog test inspection part. Not even in California. Now, you and I gotta bust our hump every year to make sure our car is in perfect working order, although some states are more stringent on their inspection than others. For example, you know, New York State, as long as the car is, you know, the frame is sound, It could have rust all over it, I guess. I mean, there are rust buckets driving around New Hampshire or New York. New Hampshire, you cannot have any auto outer body rust through at all. Now, even though if the rust is strictly cosmetic, it cannot be there. So I like to think, well, what the hell does that have to do with the car? You know, the safety of the car. Well, they don't want rust buckets on the road. And that's true. We don't have, you know, New Hampshire does not have a have rust buckets riding around, driving around the road, at least not with New Hampshire plates. But we're the ones, now even the cop cars have to have an inspection sticker on them. Now, I always found that to be interesting. By the way, do they take the car to the local, because I always get my inspections done at the oil change place. Now, I don't get my oil change there. I just get my inspection done there. Why? Aha, there is brilliance in within my madness, because all they can really do is fluid changes. That's it. They have no desire to try to fail you so they could get you to spend money on repairs. You take your car for an inspection to an auto mechanic. See, I never trust those people. Oh, you know, the regular price of an inspection is what, $25? Oh, $10 state inspections. Why? Because you're going to get my car up on the lift and you're going to say, oh, well, you know, this isn't going to pass because, you know, it's got this tiny little chip or warp in it. So we got to replace all the brakes. That'll be $800. And this part of the exhaust, now, see, you can't, that's not passable. So we got to replace the exhaust. That's another $1,200. Happens all the time. I hear people complain all the time. You know, yeah, I took my car and just get it inspected. Next thing I know, I got this $2,000 repair bill. This is why I always take it to a lube or oil change place that's licensed to do inspections. Now, I don't know what it's like in your state. They may not even be allowed to do it in your state, but I can tell you this. I've taken my, when I first moved here, I did the, you know, you take the car to the mechanic, and the repair bill that he gave me to I'm like, that's not possible. So a coworker said, well, why don't you just take it over to the oil place and see if that's, you know, get a second opinion. I took it over to an oil change place and it passed inspection. I said, well, what about this? And he said, no, that's well within safety limits. Like, you're kidding me. They wanted to charge me to replace it in order to get a sticker. So ever since then, I've always gotten an honest assessment by taking it to one of these oil change places. I've never taken my car back to a mechanic or garage to get. No, I'm not saying that there aren't honest ones out there. Obviously, there are. But so I wonder where the police department takes their vehicles to get inspected. Ah, well, they probably do it in house. I know. But it's ironic that these guys have to have. Well, you know, I'm not getting on the police, but you know, there have been times. Now, chime in if you've seen this as well. Have you ever seen? Well, you don't know exactly what the driver did, but you can speculate. Have you ever seen a police car pull over people, you know, with one headlight? Yeah, well, you know, technically you're supposed to have two headlights. And for whatever reason, you know, you're one of your headlights burnt. Now, that happens less and less today with the type of headlights that people are that they have in cars today, but because they last so damn long. And others don't last long at all. Have you ever seen them pull over a car with one headlight? Well, on more than one occasion, I have seen police cruisers pull over a car with one headlight, and the cruiser's got one headlight. I'm like, so who's going to pull them over? Now, usually cops don't give you a ticket. I hit a deer one night, and that same night I got pulled over for having one headlight. And I said, yeah, I just hit a deer. And they didn't even bother to give me a warning. He just asked if I was okay. But they don't usually give you tickets for one headlight, unless you're a total dick to the cop. Then they probably will. But it's really a reason, gives them a legal reason to pull you over. Honestly, that's the whole thing. You know, you got a tail light out. You got a one of your, you know, your license plate light is out. Has nothing to do with safety, other than it gives them a legal reason to pull you over and check you out. I don't look. I mean, this is I've seen cruisers, cop cars that have had headlights out and tail lights out. So I mean, it's obviously not about safety, because otherwise, if the cruiser, they'd immediately take it back to the station and get another car. But no, they drive around like that. So it's not about it's put there not by police officers. It's put there by those wonderful people that we call elected officials. Those are the people that make the rules and the laws, honestly. It is sometimes, it's the funniest, well, I mean, if you're the person that's being pulled over, it's not funny, but it is the funniest thing to see. You see somebody with a headlight out being pulled over by a cruiser with a headlight out. It's not, what are you going to do, pull up behind the cop and give him a ticket? I don't know if you can actually do that. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's a civilian equivalent to it, which is there are people who are under the impression that we should bring back we should have a strong civilian, well, I wouldn't say civilian force. But you know, in most states, it is perfectly legal for you to effect a citizen's arrest. Now the laws are different in each state. Now some states will dictate that you can't, you know, you arrest somebody, you detain them. You're not really arresting them. You can detain them until the police arrive, and you can't take them to the police station. In some states, you can actually act like you're arresting them and detain them and take them to the station. And explain the whatever with the witness, whatever happened, and then the person could be booked. But it's different in each state, so you really have to check your own laws. But so there are some people out there who are calling for greater civilian arrest powers. I know that there are, was it Kentucky now? Is it Kentucky? You can, under certain circumstances, you can legally shoot back at police officers who shoot at you. Now, good luck trying to prove your legal reason, but understand the law was put into effect so that people would trust the police more, because they didn't want all these according to them, they didn't want all these unnecessary shootings. So if you're an innocent person, you haven't broken any law, you have, in other words, you have the right to defend your life. So if now I've never heard of a, you know, I'm sure they probably have them, but they're rare. But I don't know if I've heard of any, you know, national cases of cops in Kentucky, you know, illegally shooting somebody. And I understand that there were a couple of other states that were considering similar laws. Now, I've always felt, whether it's a law or not, I've always felt if you were an innocent person minding your own business, even in your own house, and no matter who comes busting through that door, if they come in with guns a-blazing, I mean, you have a right to defend your life. I have always said that. I know some people are saying, well, no, you can't do it because they've got a badge. You put down your guns. Like, how are you going to change it or hold them accountable if they shoot you dead? You can't. It's not like, oh, sorry, do-over. Now, understand, I'm a big backer of the blue, but there have been too many times where they have gotten the wrong information, or they've read the information wrong, and they go busting into innocent people's houses with these SWAT tactics. Now, I'm sorry, if even one person, innocent person, is killed in this manner, then that's too many, because it's easily preventable. It is easily preventable. And, you know, we can all sit back and say, well, you know, the police made a mistake. Well, what difference does it make if it's a cop making the mistake or if it's a criminal making the mistake? The person's inside his own house, minding his own business, obeying the law, and now he's dead. Oh, we're sorry. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. I think the problem is that we've tried too hard to get proactive on crime and get too aggressive. and we have too many people who are just get out there and make some arrest, man. And they put all the pressure on the cops. Well, that's really not the cops' job. I don't know how many times I've said it. The police department's main job is not to prevent crime. They can't be everywhere. They just can't. So therefore, the only way that they can be a deterrent to a crime is if they stay in that spot. When a cop car drives by, what happens? People stand up straight. Oh, yeah, we're not doing nothing. No crime here. And the cop turns a corner and he can't be seen anymore. They go back to doing whatever they're doing. Happens all the time. So a cop's job, believe it or not, is to really come in after a crime has been committed and to try to find the perpetrator and hold them accountable. That's really what their job is. Which is why there are some states that and people in some states that want to give citizens more power, because they're the ones that are everywhere. Cops aren't. They're not everywhere. Look, I get some of my ideas from some of my friends who are actually cops and state troopers and FBI agents. I mean, these guys are doing this stuff every single day, and I hear some of their stories, and I'm like, well, you know. And they come up with some great ideas. You know, we shouldn't be doing this part. Look, you'd be surprised how many cops who think that we should get rid of SWAT teams. I'm not kidding. Mostly because of what I just said. They're getting too aggressive and they're making too many mistakes, and you don't hear about those mistakes. Honestly, you don't. I mean, if you heard about them all, it would curl your hair. It's they're being misused now, and not by the police departments, but by, as I've mentioned before, you know, you're a police officer, you call them a warrior cop. Well, warrior cops only get to a certain level in the police department. You know, you're sergeant and detective sergeant and lieutenant and captain. And usually for the warrior police officers, captain's it. You got to get political in order to get above captain. And if you want to get into the hierarchy of being, you know, in the larger cities, I don't know, I think they call them, you know, 1PP, you know, the main police department where you get into the chiefs of detectives and chiefs of the officers and the chiefs of this. And then you get to the assistant chief of police and the assistant commissioner and the commissioner. All that's political crap. Those are the ones making the rules for all the warrior cops down there on the street. They're the ones telling the cop, hey, you want to be sergeant one day? Well, you better do this, this, and this. You want to be, you know, lieutenant someday? Then you better make sure that you write this many tickets every month. Yeah, they're quotas. They're quotas. And it's not coming from the warrior cops that are on the beat. It's not them. And this is what I keep trying to tell people. And look, you can see it sometimes when you're talking to some officers, the frustration that's in their eyes and in their voice because they have to do certain things that they think are absolutely ludicrous. And folks, this is what happens when you politicize everything. It's what happens when you politicize everything. And leftists in this country have politicized everything. Our police departments are politicized. Our fire departments are politicized. Yeah, if you want to get up in the upper ranks of the fire department and, you know, and be fire chief someday, you better get political. If you're not playing politics, you're not going to make it. Past station captain. I mean, they politicized our fire department. For God's sakes, they politicized our parking departments, our parking enforcement. I can't tell you how corrupt parking enforcement is in the city of Boston. It's ridiculous. They kidnap your car. They will do that. You know, you get three or four unpaid parking tickets. They come around, boot you. Well, that's a major cost to boot you. And then you got to go and pay the, you know, pay the fine. And then you got to pay the unbooting charge. And if you don't do it within before sundown that day, I mean, you're working, right? You're out. No, no, you might be inside working someplace, 9 to 5. You come outside and your car is booted. Well, guess what? You can't get to the court until tomorrow because the courts are closed because, you know, you're working until 5 p.m. Well, your car can't sit on the street overnight with a boot on it. So what happens to it? It gets towed. So now you got the boot charge and the tow charge and the storage charge. So, you know, you get a couple of tickets, $150, $200 worth, and now it's almost $1,000 or more for you to get your car back. And every day you don't get it back, you're getting slapped with a humongous storage fee. This is from the city. So this is all political crap. And let me tell you something. I know for a fact, now I know that they've changed the meter since then, because a lot of them are these electronic things. You just you put your money in and it gives you a ticket. But when they used to have the turn dial and you put the coins in the, I know most of those didn't work properly because I've even tested them. The funny thing is that you never put in, you know, you get 25 cents for like 15 minutes. The funny thing is you never got a meter when you put in your quarter. It gave you 20 minutes. That never happened. It always seemed to happen. You put in your quarter for 15 minutes. You come back 10 minutes later, and the red flag's up saying violation. You're like, I haven't been out gone for 15 minutes. I know it. It's only 10 minutes because I timed it. You've always been short, never long. Do you think that's by accident? You think these things always break? Or in a fashion where they give you less time and never more time? That doesn't work with mechanical devices or even semi-electronic devices, which these parking meters were. It doesn't always happen that way. But again, you get into the parking department, and it's all political. These people have to, you know, these people have to do a, they have to, those meter maids, they have to write a specific number minimum tickets every day. They got to write them. That's it. Because if they want to keep their job or to grow within that division, there's a quota they have to meet. Now, is it the person walking the beat? Is it her or his fault that's writing the ticket? No, he or she is being told, well, you got to write 100 tickets a day. Well, what if there aren't 100 people who violated parking laws? There's always people who violate parking laws. Write the 100 tickets if you want to keep your job. That's the way it is, folks. I don't care what city or what town you're in. There's going to be politics that gets in the way. And simply because it's political and there's money involved, you get the short end of the stick because you're just a plain old citizen. When you have people who do these jobs, these rank and file members, who often complain that they're being forced into doing things or they're being threatened with losing their jobs or demoted unless they do this, you know there's a problem. We've always had people and I know we've looked at them and say, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're just mad because they always get, you know, hate stuff thrown at them when they're doing their job. No, that's not it. I mean, you really talk to a cop when he's off duty and really get to know him and ask him about his job, it'll make your hair curl. All the procedures and bullshit that they have to go through back at the station house, which is why so many of them don't even want to be in it. Has anybody ever noticed that? Cops don't want to be in the police house station in most places. They don't want to be in there. Have you noticed that? Well, they don't want to be there because they don't want to have to deal with all the bullshit and all the politics. That's not why they wanted that job. But unless you're a politician, does anybody want to deal with the politics?
You're listening to The Rod Eccles Show, the coolest, most politically incorrect, conservative black man on the planet.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-595-2614 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 595-2614 to take your call now. Call 800-595-2614. That's 800-595-2614. Again, 800-595-2614.
We've all heard of male enhancement, but now there's an expert on true male enhancement in the areas that really count. In Herb Ellis's book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, you'll find answers to questions like, why doesn't she want to have sex? A quick start, quick results workout guide. Plus, what you can do as a side hustle to make money now. With all the great tips in this book, every man can benefit. Get the book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, on Amazon.com.
It started with a knock, but it wouldn't end there. What happens in the story next, many wouldn't understand, and most wouldn't believe. 5+2=Perfection by Samuel Rosette Jr. is a must-read. The scriptures within are reminders of the ancient past, and yet intriguingly infuses with texts which stand on the edge of the stage of relevancy. Available online at Westbow Press, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and SamuelRosetteJr.com.
This holiday season, help Soldiers for Stockings improve the morale and welfare of members of our armed forces deployed overseas. Now through November 20th, there is so much work to be done, and you can help in many ways. Download the stocking pattern from stockingsforsoldiers.org and start sewing today. Volunteer to help decorate and assemble stockings. Donate Christmas candy, snacks, nuts, chips, drink mixes, DVDs, books, magazines, lip balm, toiletries, and other items needed to fill the stockings. Or help make packets of snowman soup, hot chocolate to send along with the stockings. For more information, patterns, and a list of items needed, visit stockingsforsoldiers.org. This holiday season, help send our troops a touch of home. For many, it's all they will receive. All stockings need to be completed by November 20th. So get started today at stockingsforsoldiers.org. That's stockingsforsoldiers.org. Stockings for Soldiers, sending stockings filled with joy to our soldiers in harm's way for the 9th consecutive year.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-471-9742. That's 800-471-9742. Again, 800-471-9742.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit, doesn't matter. No credit, doesn't matter. bankruptcy or divorce, it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 7ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.7ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 7ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
Hold on, so there, how's that better? What in the, why things freezing up? Politics. I'm telling you right now, it's politics. Somebody's playing with the soundboard and everything here at the Spreaker sound system. Any case, we're still here. So, but you know, by this little demonstration of just what happened there, let me tell you, won't be surprised if the show gets cut short today, not by my own hand. Politics. But politics are in just about everything. Now, if you talk to different people, and I talk to a lot of different people, do I know people in every, you know, type of government position? Well, no. Have I talked to every, you know, people in every single different government position? No. But I do like to talk to people. I just talk to them. Yeah, wherever I am, I talk to them, and I find out, you know, where they work. And, you know, geez, you just go over to the cigar shop, and you meet a, you know, bunch of different types of guys. Even some women come in there. And, you know, you just talk to them. You find out what they do. And a lot, because, you know, Concord is a capital city. It's a political town here in New Hampshire. A lot of people work for the government. You know, the state government here. And you just listen to them, and these people, they're just your regular rank and file members. They have no real grudge against the people that they serve, but they some of them have to take a lot of heat from us citizens because they have to deal. Their job is to deal directly with us, and a lot of times they think that they can't continue in the job because of the politics involved. And some of these people know what they're doing is not the right thing to do to citizens. After all, we're supposed to be the bosses. So you just talk to people and you find out what they do and what gets in their way. The vast majority of people don't want to have anything to do with any type of politics in their job. They don't. But they have to deal with it. You know, I used to say that too. I don't get involved in office politics. Well, the problem is that in some offices that I worked in, as much as I wanted to stay out of it, you were forced to play the game. I came here to work and get a paycheck. I didn't come here to play all these games. And that's what you had to do. I even had a job where the boss told me flat out. I even told him in the interview, like, no, I don't play the games, you know, that some sales organizations play. I go out there, I hit my numbers, I try to expand the territory. I always do what's right for to the customer, so the company looks good in their eyes. And there, the customer comes first. I actually had the boss pull me into the office 6 months later and tell me, well, I thought we could change you. Quote, unquote. I mean, here I am helping a big-ass customer, help him with a problem he's been having with the company for months, got it fixed, had him turn around and give us the biggest order in our district of that kind of an order ever. Take it back into the office, only to have the boss pull me into the office and say, well, you missed the meeting today. Well, I was in the middle of helping the customer and finally got this resolved, and look at this great order. He says, you know, this is where you're supposed to be. Like, I'm sorry, I thought I was a salesman. I was supposed to be out there. I thought it was customer first. And he's like, he shook his head and looked at me and said, I thought we could change you. I'm like, excuse me? You realize, folks, a week later I was fired. Because I wouldn't play the game. And he gave me the reason right there in his office. I thought we could change you. Politics is everywhere. And I know some people say, well, you didn't do your job. Yet while I was there, I increased the sales and I expanded the territory, had more customers, even brought in the biggest order of its kind from helping that one customer fix his ongoing problem. I wasn't doing my job. Yeah, I was. That was the problem. I didn't realize that I wasn't supposed to be doing my job. I didn't realize I was supposed to be kissing up to the office manager. I didn't realize I was supposed to be talking him up, making him look good so he could be promoted. I didn't realize all that. I thought my job was to go out there and make the company money. That's what I thought my job was. Evidently, I was wrong. And there are a lot of people that have different jobs, both private and in the public sector, who've got it wrong. They think their job is to, you know, either make the company money or to help the citizen. Oh, no, they got it wrong. Their job is simply to make their boss look good so they can get promoted. Now, you would think by actually helping the customer or helping the citizen would make the boss look good, but evidently that's not good enough or that doesn't work. So you got to play the game. Well, I refuse to play the game. And trust me, it comes back to bite you when you refuse to jump into the office politics type of thing. I don't care if it's a private company or if it's government work. It doesn't matter. When you refuse to play, you become enemy number one. Why? Because then they realize they can't control you. And if they can't control you, you cannot be of use to them. Do you realize that? This is why cops don't stay in the precinct house for any longer than they have to. They don't want to be around all the politics. You know, hey, officer, come in here. You're going to do this. They don't want to be around for that stuff. They don't want to get roped into that stuff. They like what they're doing out in the street. That's where they want to be. Because anytime they're back at the house, politics comes into play. And they don't like it. Don't blame them. They're out there trying to do their job, and they have other people out there that are just trying to get promoted. Trying to make themselves look better. And they'll make it, and these people will say anything, do anything, even oftentimes break rules or regulations, or even break the law. And then if they get caught, they blame it on some underling. They don't take responsibility for themselves. They just pass the buck down. And, there are times even when the underling doesn't even know it's against the rules or regulations, and they go ahead and do it because they were told to do it by the boss, and the underling gets caught, and the boss throws them under the bus, and the underling stands there like, wait, but you told me to, I didn't know, you're fired. Happens all too often, even in the public sector. Well, especially in the public sector. In government, underlings come in and they're given assignments and tasks, and next thing you know, something gets screwed up or somebody gets caught doing something and the underling gets thrown under the bus and there goes their career, and because the guy who actually did all the manipulating gets by scot-free because he's playing the political game, so he's moving up the political ladder. And you're just fodder. And by the way, we're seeing it on display right now in political campaigns. And the there's always an enabler when it comes to playing politics in the office, no matter if it's public or private. There's always an enabler. And usually the enabler is the person who is just one or two levels above the person who's playing the politics. So in other words, maybe you have the office manager, so maybe the building manager or the vice president of that division is actually allowing all that politics to be played. That's what usually happens. That's for private. And in the public sector, when you're looking at politicians, well, who are the politicians' bosses really? Well, it's the people. Well, who are the front men to the people? And the people are supposed to be the boss of all the politicians because, you know, they elect the people who then go out and hire and appoint other people that aren't elected. So who's their boss? Well, the boss is the people. Well, who's the mouthpiece for the people? Well, the mouthpiece, the manager, if you will, of the people, the secretary. You know, 'cause you try to go see the president of the company or the CEO or something. What do you run into first? You usually run into, you know, a secretary or two or assistant, right? Yeah. Well, and usually the secretary or the assistant does a lot of the speaking for the CEO or the president before you get to see him, right? Yeah. So they're usually called the gatekeeper and the mouthpiece. So who's the gatekeeper and the mouthpiece for the public? Well, it's supposed to be the media, the press. Right? But what is the press doing? They flipped it. Instead of being the mouthpiece and the gatekeeper for the people, the press is now the mouthpiece and gatekeeper for the politicos. And so every time something is said or done, those mouthpieces, just like the secretary of the CEO, they want to twist it and turn it and make it sound like something it was never intended to be. Or they try to hide stuff or they lie about it openly, kind of like the whole thing with the McCain funeral. Oh, Donald Trump is not going to McCain's funeral. Well, have you people forgotten that John McCain barred Donald Trump from his funeral? That was McCain. Not McCain's family. McCain said, well, I don't want him coming to my funeral. Well, hello. Now, what do you think the press would say about Donald Trump if Donald Trump showed up at McCain's funeral? Oh, they would. Oh, he's disrespecting McCain, but his wishes were that he didn't come. They would remember then that he wasn't supposed to be there. Well, trust me, they would remember then. But since he's not going, well, now they're going to jump on him for not going. How could you not go? This guy, this man was a hero, and this was. Well, folks, I understand there are people that have personal feelings with John McCain. I get it. But look, I know a lot more facts than obviously a lot of people do out there about this man. He's not exactly what I would call hero material. I'm sorry, but he's not. There are a lot of things that the media have hidden or people have forgotten about this guy. He's been around a long, long time. He's got a long record. And there are just a lot of things, and people forget. Now, we've had the, you know, back during when he was running for president, we had the, you know, before that we had Kerry when he was running, John Kerry running against Bush. We had the Swift voters on Kerry. Well, did you know that there were quote unquote Swift voters on John McCain? I remind people of that because sometimes it's, yeah, that's right. There were. I forgot all about it. Well, remember what they said? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wasn't really a big hero. They don't think he's a big hero. Exactly. So, I understand. Well, he's a war hero, man. He was a POW. There are lots of people in POW camps, but lots of those people weren't given the nickname Songbird. Look, I'm just saying there's a lot about McCain that people are all of a sudden willing to overlook. And it's, you don't even got to go that far back. 2008, John McCain is a racist. He's a bigot. He's an a-hole. And then those same people, 10 years later, when he passes away, oh, he was a hero, man. He was wonderful. Look at Trump as just an a-hole. John McCain was a beautiful man. Wait, just a decade ago, you called him a racist. So this is what we're supposed to be dealing with when it comes to this kind of stuff. Because these people are playing politics instead of worrying about the truth. Now I just heard that, I guess, Sarah Palin is being barred from John McCain. Now, Sarah Palin is his former running mate. I don't ever remember hearing Sarah Palin say anything really negative about John McCain. Why the hell would he prevent her from coming to his funeral? Now, I don't know if Senator McCain himself expressed a wish that she not be there, or if it's just the family, but in either case, how do you keep your vice presidential running mate from attending your funeral? I mean, especially when, you know, this is what people forget a lot as well. Sarah Palin was... Well, let me just put it into terms that people can understand. A what if? What if scenario? What if John McCain really put his best foot forward in 2008 and beat Barack Obama? Well, that means that Sarah Palin would have been the first female vice president of the United States ever. Now, whether or not John McCain would have won a second term, it would have meant that at some point that Sarah and Hillary Clinton would have had to square off. Because, I mean, it's highly possible. I mean, what if Hillary Clinton could have ran in 2012 because Obama was out of the picture because he lost in 2008, and she could have won in 2012. I know it's all scary, but just think, Hillary Clinton's in office, 2012. Sarah Palin comes along in 2016. Hillary's looking for a second term, so it's two women fighting. Think about that. Just a what if. But Sarah Palin was evil and awful. Remember that? Remember all the nasty negative stuff that the left said about her? Even called her, you know, certain female body part names. Yeah, I remember that. A lot of people forget. But short memories. My memory's not that short. Some of the insults that she had to endure by being John McCain's partner, running mate. I remember those stuff. I remember all that stuff. And now it's being said that she's being barred from his funeral? Is that the action of a hero? I mean, are those the actions of somebody that you would bestow the term hero on? Now, I know there could have been some, you know, behind-the-scenes flack between the two, and they could have had a falling out. I got it. I get it. But usually in a case like this, people put all those differences aside, if at least for show. You know, because of politics. But for whatever reason... And the press is picking up on it and saying, oh, look, Sarah Palin's not even allowed to go to McCain. John McCain was an even greater hero than we thought. He doesn't like Sarah. He doesn't like Donald. That's just great stuff. So Donald Trump doesn't make plans or preparations to, and you know, God forbid, Donald Trump follows the law, the protocol of how you handle the flag when a sitting member of Congress passes away. So he follows it. He even distributes the law, the rules, and the press still lambastes him so badly. Well, how dare you raise that flag? And the president's like, well, look, this is what it says to do. Well, we don't follow rules in D.C. Don't you know that? And this is the whole problem. The president is trying to follow the rules. Look what happens when he follows and enforces law that Democrats pass. You know, the whole separating the child from the mother at the border when they cross illegally. Who did that first? Oh, yeah, that was laws passed by Bill Clinton and Democrats back in the 90s. That was laws that were fully enforced by Obama. And now this president comes along and, you know, obeys the law, tries to enforce the law, and they jump all over. And then he does what they want, knowing it's unconstitutional. He issues an executive order to put a stop to it. And those same people then take him to court to prevent him from doing it. And the liberal judge says, no, that's unconstitutional, Mr. President. You can't do that. So they're still complaining that he's separating children. He tried to stop it, but they stopped him from stopping that issue. You know, Donald Trump, him and McCain, there's no love lost between them. McCain actually said the words out of his mouth, I don't want him at my funeral. The president doesn't make plans to go, and the press jumps all over the president for not going to John McCain's funeral. Well, McCain himself said he didn't want me there. So I'm honoring a dying man's wishes. But nobody wants to pay attention to that. Because our wonderful mouthpieces, our gatekeepers, are no longer working for us. They're working for the enemy. They're working for the other side. They're working for the other company. They're playing politics big time. And most of us don't want to play. It's amazing. And this whole monkey business thing, when did just saying, you know what? Here's the problem. The next time you hear some leftist say, well, that's a racist thought, you got to ask him point blank, well, why is that racist? I wasn't meaning it that way, or I didn't take it that way. Why do you think it's racist? And you let them explain to you, and then you always get them back by saying, well, that's a racist thought. I guess you're the real racist. Because that's the truth. If it's a benign thought by saying, well, you know, we got to stop monkeying around, and somebody says, oh, that's racist. Well, we use that term all the time, do we not? Well, yeah. But since his opponent is black, that's racist. Oh. So maybe... maybe he didn't even think about that whole part about, you know, monkey being connected with black people, but you automatically thought that. So I guess you're the real racist then. Because when I heard it, I sure didn't put those two things together. Oh, monkey, you know, we can't monkey it up. Oh, well, his opponent is a black guy, so that means he was being racist towards a black guy. It was code. It was code words, you know, for racism. And I didn't get that at all, and I'm a black guy. So I don't know where these people got it from. Well, maybe because they're actually the true racists, and they're trying to use the press as their mouthpiece to play politics. By the way, whenever these people play politics, who always loses? It isn't the person who's playing the game. It's usually the people who don't want to play the game, who just want things to be honest and upfront. We're the ones that end up losing. Don't doubt me.
I'm not Rod Eccles, and I approve this message.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool,